Hello and welcome to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco. I'm Eric Jansen. What makes us male or female, or something in between, or maybe something not even on that narrow, dare I say, straight line? And how much of it is based on the physical body we're born with rather than other traits? My guests tonight have at least one thing in common. They're all part of The Boy Who Was Not a Lesbian and Other True Stories. It's an unusual and beautiful book put together by Norwegian photojournalist Kristin Lysegen. In 2007, she started seeking participants for a project to increase the understanding of people who define themselves as born in the wrong body. 5 years later, she had collected and portrayed, through photographs and words, the stories of four women and seven men from England, Cuba, Switzerland, Denmark, Spain, Norway, and here in the Bay Area, who generously shared their life experiences with her. She notes that in the 5 years it took to research, photograph, write, and publish the book, more than 800 people with gender identity issues were known to have been murdered around the world. She's here with us on Out in the Bay, along with two of the book's subjects and her partner, a psychiatrist at Children's Hospital in Oakland, who works extensively with transgender youth and young children. Kristin Lysegen, did I say that right? Welcome to Out in the Bay.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
And if you would, please, introduce us to the people you've brought with you.
Okay. So we have Bo here on my right. Bo is the first person who contacted me about the book project when I put an ad up on a website to seek participants. And then we have Marcus, who I met a little bit later, from Norway.
Okay, so say hello, guys.
Hi.
And Herb Schreier over there, your partner, is also here with us.
Herb, hi.
Thanks for being here. So, Chris, let me ask you first, what inspired you to embark on this project?
Well, I moved from Norway to England in Birmingham in 2001, 2 days before September 11. And I found a completely new world to photograph. I used to be a journalist, a news reporter, and I was taken out by some gay friends to the gay street in Birmingham, the only safe street for people, I would say, who were different. And I met a very tall female figure who defined as a transvestite. And she, her and I became friends quite quickly. I asked if I could see her as Rob, and I was really fascinated by the gender and the identity. I had never seen anything like that in Norway, and it really fascinated me. And so that's how it started. She came to pick me up the next day as a man, and we drove out 30 minutes outside Birmingham, and he's... car was full of cigarettes, and he lived in a council house flat, and I ended up taking pictures and following him for many years, and we're still friends, and that's how I wanted to continue. And then I met another person who said that she was born in the wrong body, and that was very different from the life that Michelle Robb lived. And I thought, okay, that's going to be my project when I move back to Norway. Mm-hmm. Because I felt that I had to have a project to work on if I was going to survive in Norway. It's just too normal for me.
So, Norway is too normal.
Yes.
A little, what do you mean by that? A little more bland than we're used to other parts of the world?
I don't take pictures in Norway. For me, I've seen everything. I have to take pictures of everything that I haven't seen before.
Yeah, and so tell us a little bit about your previous work, just, you know, kind of briefly, but because your work previous was also kind of about people out of the mainstream in some way or another. Is that fair to say? Is that a good characterization?
Yeah. I love learning out about different minorities. To get into, to be, you know, become part of them in a way, and follow them and photograph them and try and find out why they have chosen this other way of living. And it's really fascinating how people really do want to live outside of the mainstream. Mm-hmm. And then some people don't have a choice.
So, Bo and Marcus, if you can... how did you meet Kristin, and why did you want to participate in this project of hers?
Well, I saw the note in the OBRS magazine where she was telling about the project and searching for people.
And what's that magazine?
Harry Benjamin Research Center.
Yes. In the magazine, I saw the note.
This is a magazine that's put up by a center that does, that does what?
So the GID clinic, there's one GID clinic in Norway, and there's one organization working run by gender identity issued people with gender identity issues.
That's what GID. That's what GID stands for.
And
or has some. I assume that's in Danish or some other or Norwegian.
So I contacted the head of that organization and asked if she could help me to find people for my project. And I put out an ad on the internet, and it came in the newsletter.
And I see. Okay.
Yeah. So newsletter.
So Bo or Boo, it looks like Bo in English, but Boo. What made you want to contact Chris?
Well, I saw the ad, and then I thought this is a really important project. I have missed for myself a book like that. There was nothing like that in Scandinavia, and for me, I was not much on the internet, so I have no place to found help mm-hmm. for this or others in the same situation. So I contacted her and said that I would like to join in, but she could not take pictures of me, but I would like to tell my story. And that's, I think we had made a book that is, that I hope will be read by many peoples, by the families, by teachers, by doctors, by therapists, by every people actually, and make people curious about who are you, who are inside you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Marcus, similar, how did you happen to contact Kristen?
I'm a friend of Boo, so he talked about the project and I just wanted to join.
Okay. Can you tell us a little bit about your early years, you know, when you first felt that you were not in the right body?
Yeah, I knew I was born in the wrong body since I was like 5 years old. And I didn't understand why I had a girl's name. And I still feel I'm in the wrong body because it's still difficult. And if you see me in the street, you have no problem defining me as a man. But if I take my clothes off, you go quiet. And that's like, it's still difficult even if I'm done with my surgeries.
Right. Okay. Uh-huh. So how did you, get to trust Chris in this, you know, project? Since you're talking a whole lot about your life and letting her take photographs, and she's a total stranger at first.
Well, yes, she was a total stranger. And now we are friends. We are a big family in this book group. It took not long time. I knew at first that this was a person I could trust. I never doubted in that. I don't know why.
He even wrote a will that he would let me finish the book if something happened to him. He had to make sure that was written down.
Wow, okay.
But,
so it's changed you a lot to participate in this project, I guess, yeah? Both of you?
It is very scary to participate. It still is. I'm scared every time I look at the book.
And here you are now talking on the radio about it.
Yes, but I think it's I have to go step outside myself and think about all the kids and young people who are in the same situation and the people around them who don't know about this. It's important to get more, what do you call it, knowledge.
Mm-hmm. So I want to turn to Herb Schreier for a moment here. Herb tell us what you do at Children's Hospital.
I'm in the Department of Psychiatry at Children's. We do a lot of consultation work in the hospital, a lot of community work, but I've been seeing transgender kids going on 15 years now coming into the clinic. And one thing that's happening is that we're seeing greatly increased numbers of kids coming in, and that's true when I visit clinics in Europe or around the world that everybody is starting to see many, many more kids, some as young as 3, 4, 5. More interestingly, I had a conversation with somebody in Amsterdam last week, and they're talking about more of the kids are coming at a very young age, having transitioned in their life at that age, 3, 4, 5 years of age. That's mostly boys. Boys outnumber girls. Boys to girls outnumber girls in young kids by about 4, 5 to 6 to 1, but by adolescence, it's equal.
So why do you think it's we're seeing more of it? Is it just more that more publicity about it?
I think it's ironic. The debate over whether this should be called a disorder was made very public for the DSM-5 about 5 years ago. It's been argued in public, and parents, unlike what happened with parents of autistic kids, are coming out and saying, I know what's right for my child, and I'm not going to take my kid to a clinic where they try to change them. And by the way, there's a study in 3 states in the United States, which has been now being confirmed in Amsterdam, that the number of people who are who identify as transgender, this is people between the ages of 18 and 69, is 1 in 200. Way, way, way off from what we were thinking about before.
And, of course, this must have been true throughout time, right?
Indeed, yeah.
So what did people do in earlier societies?
I think they lived lives undercover, both literally and figuratively. I think it's been a very, very – it's hard to imagine what they went through. Even now when they have an opportunity, the clinics are now allowing these kids to be who they are. Prior to this, there were clinics that would see them and would try to change them. That's still going on in certain countries.
Mm-hmm. Which is, it sounds like it's very similar to this issue of intersex individuals, that they are kind of forced to be in either one or the other. Mm-hmm. Either male or female, you can't be something in between or something that's not either one.
Yeah, which is just the mainstay of our thinking, which is false thinking. But intersex is so less common than transgender kids.
Ken, I'd like to hear a little bit more about Boo and Marcus's stories. So can you tell us a little bit about your childhood, where you grew up and how that was, either one of you? Let's start with Boo and then, either one. Marcus, go ahead.
I just looked and acted like a boy since I was 5. So I had... it was kind of easy because maybe it's easier when you are like a little girl acting like a little boy. I think that's more easy to get away with. Yeah.
Oh, right, right. It's easy for a girl to act like a boy. It's more like a tomboy thing is okay.
Yeah. And you
not
did
so much.
Have.
Go ahead.
You did have a hippie mother with free.
Yeah.
upbringing sort of style.
So open-minded.
Which is very different from Boo's upbringing.
Mm-hmm. What towns? Did you grow up in small towns, rural areas, Marcus?
Yeah, quite small.
Mm-hmm. In Denmark or Norway?
Norway.
And Boo, what about you?
I grew up in Denmark on the west coast in a little town.
Little town, okay. Yeah. And I think I read, I'm not sure I've read your story, Marcus, but I read yours in the book. But worked on a fishing boat.
No, I worked on a sailboat in Norway later on when I was grown up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there's a short quote from you that's on the website. I saw somewhere in the book as well. It says, before when I didn't know this was something I could get treatment for, I thought I was mentally ill. That was from 2010. That's not that long ago.
No. Well, it's such a small note, it's taken out of the whole
context of the whole thing. Yes,
but yes, I had many years where I went to different therapists, and they all tried to talk me into the woman role. Roman, what do you call it? The role.
Yeah, to be like
to act like and to be like, and I really tried.
You didn't really have any place to be you.
No.
So how did you find out about this? You call it the GID, the gender
identity disorder.
Right. How did you find out about this clinic?
I moved to Norway when I was 19, And for some years I lived with a friend, and one day she came home with a newspaper with an article in. And it was the first newspaper, and it was the first article in the whole my whole life where I saw something about a man who was had been born with a girl's body. Mm-hmm. I have never heard about it before. I am not grown up with the internet, so for me, it is newspaper.
Yeah, and it seems like actually it's one of the first sort of famous cases that we heard about in the United States years ago was, wasn't it, Christine Jorgensen, the Christine Jorgensen mm-hmm. story, who was Danish or where was
yeah,
she from?
Yeah, Danish.
So that was a very early kind of high profile, probably sensationalized case that we heard about years ago. So I guess I'm sort of surprised to hear that there wasn't more knowledge about this in Scandinavia.
There's no...
We are very few people there also. I mean, we are 4.5 million people in Norway. So great. It's fairly small.
Okay.
So oh, they...
Yeah, I want to ask a little bit about these two folks here are from Scandinavia, as you are, but you've interviewed people from all over in this work, Cuba. And there was a young man from Oakland, not Oakland, but the East Bay, Hayward
Newark.
Or Fremont?
Newark.
Newark. Yeah, Newark. So tell us a little bit about him. I know you sort of lost touch and he couldn't be part of this conversation today, but he's in the book.
He's in the book, and I met him twice, interviewed him twice, took photographs of him, and we got to know each other. I think I was very taken by the story he told me. He is adopted into a Caucasian family from an Afro-American background, and
well, there's a little short section that I pulled out of the book. I wanted to just read. Damon is his name, and the chapter is called For Gwen, and there's a short excerpt from it. I responded by cutting off all my hair, Damon said. He had watched the horrifying news reports about this beautiful and gentle teenager, alone and terrified as she was bludgeoned to death in Newark, California in 2002. Gwen Araujo, 17 years old, had suffered a horrendous death because she was trapped in a male body. Damon, who had not yet told anyone about who he was, felt he needed to support the people in the community. He could no longer hide behind his given female name.
Yeah, so this was a story that really touched on many people, and as the more I've been in touch with the communities, the more that I learned that people really still remember Gwen. And I contacted her mother, actually, during the time I wrote the chapter. Mm-hmm. So Damon, he felt he could not hide that he was a boy anymore. He had to tell his friends, he had to support the community,
mm-hmm.
and if
I'm not mistaken, he was in a situation where he could really not afford any surgery at all. So, least in the book, he still has breasts, and yeah.
I don't know his current situation at all, so mm-hmm. I can't say. But it's just different here than in Scandinavia, for example. A lot of people in the book have been part of the healthcare system
in Scandinavia.
Yeah.
So there's more resources available from the healthcare standpoint in Scandinavia.
It's just very different.
Here. Yeah. Is that Herb? Do you want to?
No, actually, this treatment is now becoming available. San Francisco, for example, is going to cover all of the treatment and will apparently cover it for people who don't even have insurance. And some of it is even being done in prison. So it is available. There's a shortage of people that can do the evaluations and do the treatment. But in the Bay Area, we have something called Mind the Gap. It's a clinic without walls where people in just any part of the Bay Area can get this kind of help now.
You're listening to Out in the Bay. I'm Eric Jansen. My guests are Chris Lysigan. Did I get it right the second time?
Yeah.
Kristen Lysigan, photojournalist and author of The Boy Who Was Not a Lesbian and Other True Stories. Bo and Marcus, two of the subjects of this book, and Kristen's partner Herb Schreier, a psychiatrist at Children's Hospital in Oakland. Out in the Bay is supported in part by the Bar Association of San Francisco's Lawyer Referral and Information Service, providing legal referrals in over 100 areas of the law, including those most relevant to the LGBT community. Information online at sfbar.org/LRIS or by phone at 415-989-1616. Chris, one of the things you touch on several times in the book, by the way, this book is it's beautiful. I mean, that's another thing. Chris is a photojournalist, and we get a lot of books at the radio station, and it took me a while before I actually even opened the package. And then I was just struck by these really incredible photographs in here of people. And one of the things you mentioned in the book a couple of places is how you had a little bit of a problem. And as you said earlier, you've kind of photographed in your past people who are very different looking, and these people look normal to you. So you had a hard time, like, through photographs, telling their story.
Yeah. We knew really early on that we wanted to... I felt that I had a very different picture of what people with gender identity issues, what they are like, because you have this... you have the media, almost like a bullying... media coverage. I couldn't find anything not so controversial. It was all super controversial, which, you know, journalists, we like that. But, and I must admit, I really love photographing people who look differently. But in this project, it was very important to write about the human beings and give them a voice and just show them, show people that they live like us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they will go to work, they go to school, they function really well in society. Of course, not all of them, but...
Tell us about... we've been talking mostly, because we're here in the room, with about male trans folk, men. But there's women in the book, too, including Yanet and Nomi of Cuba. Can you tell us a little bit about them? You went to Cuba for this. Did you specifically go there for that reason, to meet them, or you just happened to be in Cuba and...
We happened to be in Cuba, and my book was finished, and I had decided I have enough material, and I had been collecting material for 5 years, and I was still not finished writing everything. And then I thought, but it would be really great to have someone from Cuba. And we went to a sexology conference hosted by Mariela Castro Espin, and I heard about a drag queen show. Mm-hmm. And I thought, let's go there. And I immediately met these people. I walked in with a large camera and a large flash. And so I could, that's how I sometimes connect with people.
And they didn't mind you taking their photographs.
And they loved it, of course. And so we met the next day. We only had a day together. But they showed me their home. And they also told me that this last couple of years have been okay. It's been... okay to be gay, and they have a place to go out in Havana, which is very different from the past.
Yeah,
so things are really changing there.
Yeah, and yes. Mariela Castro has been quite instrumental.
Yeah, so she came back here, and we met her again in San Francisco. And but I haven't been able to get in touch with them, so if anybody is going to Cuba, then I would be happy to send a couple of books. We have sent some books to Cuba with some people, but they still haven't received them. So
before I run out of time, I want to make sure that we get the website for the book so that people know more about it, theboywhowasnotalesbian.com. That's the title of the book,
yes.
The Boy Who Was Not a Lesbian and Other True Stories. Did I get the second part
yes.
right?
Yes. Yeah.
So the website is theboywhowasnotalesbian.com. So what are the next steps? What do you do from here? Herb, let me ask you, Herb Schreier, what are the next steps in making the world more healthy for those who don't come out of the womb in a body that conforms to society's expectations?
Well, it's been years of battles, but we're finally seeing some results. First of all, to make this not a disorder has just been one. It's now called dysphoria. Difficult to go into all that that's about. There are very few clinics, one or two, that still try to change children by doing therapy in a way which we find repugnant in a way, because we don't think that these kids are solving a problem by this decision they make. And thirdly, most clinics that are practicing this current form of therapy, which is to delay puberty and then go to cross-sex hormones if things are continuing and then to surgery, report incredibly good outcomes. There hasn't been a single case of post-surgery regret in Amsterdam where they've done over 100 kids, and they're really, really careful. We're about to do a study here in the Bay Area allowing kids to transition early, which they're doing anyway, but there's very little data on how well that's going to work, although there are some signs that we can identify kids early and go along with who they say they are.
And how does that help them in the long run? I mean, I assume your Marcus and Beau, your lives would have been quite different if you in your childhood had been able to, you know, to go through an adolescence or a childhood in the body that you felt like was right for you. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. I don't want to say anything more about that.
It's a long time to wait, through puberty, and it's all. It's been nice to just be a boy from maybe 15 or something.
Yeah, the surgeries are quite... They're quite huge. I mean,
can you tell us just? We only have a minute or two left, but can you? You said there were some problems with the gender reassignment. Sometimes wanting to be like it's all or nothing, or there's no. Marcus had some specific problems. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So we have one clinic in Norway, a GID clinic. It has kind of a monopoly on gender reassignment surgeries. Everything has to go through there. In Sweden, they are opening up different clinics. I think they're still run by the government, but they are different clinics also going to include a youth clinic and for children and youth. And then in Denmark, there's hardly any surgeries at all. It's very conservative, and we know that for a fact. They have many more surgeries than in Norway than Denmark. But anyway...
Herb, go ahead.
Just in one simple part to this, if you do puberty-delaying hormones in a female to male, that person doesn't develop breasts. You save a surgery that can be quite, seems like a simple one, but it can be quite complicated.
Yeah. Complicated and probably traumatic to some extent.
Yeah, and traumatic,
right? So Marcus almost, he almost was bleeding to death after his top surgery. And
Yeah, but the surgery is one thing, but also the puberty, to go through the puberty is...
Do you feel like you have to go through it twice, in a way?
Yes, but the second one was fantastic, even though it was a little late.
Yeah. At 30, that's how I felt about coming out gay at 30. It was like, that's what I felt like coming out gay at 30. It was like, I'm a teenager again.
Yeah.
Just think about
a boy.
It's a really hard time to go through that puberty.
Think about a boy, a regular boy who develops breasts because of estrogens of puberty and how they feel now, imagining developing breasts.
And the monthly thing.
Can I just...
Quickly, because
it's important for me to say that I'm keeping on the transgender projects and that people are dying here from injecting silicone, for example, illegally and things like that. So we have a lot of things to work on here in terms of the Afro-American cultures and the Latino cultures are very different from...
Here in the Bay Area, where can people go for info about these kind of issues? Is there a...
There's a clinic at UCSF Medical School for all of these issues.
Well, they should speak to Fresh White. He's working at the LGBT Center in San Francisco. The Transgender Law Center.
Yes, Transgender Law Center.
They're
great.
Very brilliant.
And they can call me at Children's Hospital for young kids if they want.
You've been listening to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco. I want to thank you all for being here. Chris Leisigan, photojournalist and author of The Boy Who Was Not a Lesbian and Other True Stories. Beau and Marcus in the book. Thank you very much. And Kristen's partner, Herb Schreier, a psychiatrist at Children's Hospital in Oakland. You can find more information about the book at theboywhowasnotalesbian.com. If you missed part of this broadcast, you can hear the whole thing on our website, outinthebay.org, by about 9 o'clock tonight, where you can also sign up for free podcasts and get the Stitcher app. That's right, Stitcher, that lets you hear radio programs on mobile devices. You can also hear our most recent shows right on the site and about a dozen of our favorites from our 8 years on the air. Just look for the plain favorites section. We've been producing Out in the Bay for more than 8 years, and it's an independent production, not a KLW staff production. Out in the Bay receives no funds from KLW. We need your financial support. It's easy and tax-deductible on our website, outinthebay.org. Out in the Bay is independently produced by me and Marilyn Pittman. We thank KALW for studio use and airtime. Our theme music was composed and performed by San Francisco musician Holly Ann Mead. We'd love to hear from you with segment suggestions, general comments, and questions, so write to us, eric@outinthebay.com and marilyn@outinthebay.com. I'm Eric Jansen. Thanks for listening. Out in the Bay is supported in part by the San Francisco Frontrunners Pride Run, June 29th in Golden Gate Park, underwritten by Wells Fargo advisor Dan Jorenstad and dentist Peter Farmer. Pride Run information online at sfpriderun.org.